Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
I'm a research scientist working on fusion energy and advanced space propulsion using plasma, which is hot gas. It's the stuff the stars are made out of, and the sun and the aurora borealis and lightning bolts. So that's what I do for a living. And it's a very useful thing to the government because you and the reason I got involved in this work because I was working at a government lab. I went to school at a government lab that designed hydrogen bombs at one end of the lab, and we were trying to harness fusion at the other. So we're trying to destroy the humanity at one end of the lab and save it at the other. So then I got another job at another government lab, this one in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I started out in Livermore, California, and then I ended up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we went through the nuclear winter stuff came out there, and we knew we were at ground zero. They had a big weapon stockpile out in the mountain, out in the desert near where we worked, and we knew that the Russians were going to hit the place with about 100 nuclear weapons. There was going to be nothing left but a big smoking crater, and so it was a nuclear war. And then the nuclear winter stuff came out while I was working there, and we also went through a nuclear crisis called Able Archer 83. We came as close to nuclear war as we did during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And you've never gone through a nuclear crisis till you're at a nuclear weapons lab. So I was, myself and all my colleagues were in despair about the future of the human race. We thought we were going to blow ourselves up just by accident. Then I discovered this research that had been done on Mars, and I thought, I was very naive then, and I thought, gee, if we discover a dead civilization on Mars, the Russians and the United States will have to come together and go explore together. So, and that'll end the Cold War. So there, that was my goal, end the Cold War.
And you're funny.
I know, I was very naive then, you know?
Well, I mean, you know what you know now, and a lot of people say that, actually. You know, a long time ago, I was naive.
So. Oh, absolutely. I was just a wet behind the ears kid in those days. I believed everything the government told me.
What do you think about the government now?
Oh, I take everything they say with a grain of salt. In fact, I got a big bag of salt to anything the government says. I figure it's only a half-truth, if that. So, and it's part of running the government. Knowledge is power, girl. Knowledge is power. And so the government always reserves power to itself by keeping knowledge of what's really going on. They play those cards close to the chest.
I want to talk to you about NASA, too.
Yeah.
What did you do for NASA?
Oh, I was part of the Clementine mission to the moon. And that was partly NASA mission. Actually, it was mostly run out of the Pentagon, a mission to the moon run by the Pentagon mostly, but the NASA rode along. So we dealt with a lot of people from NASA. So, but NASA is its own culture. And one of your things you realize is that NASA is biophobic. They say they're looking for life on other planets, but they're supposed to look, but they're not supposed to find any.
But they already know there's life on other planets, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they landed on Mars in 1977 or 1976, actually, and they tested the soil for life signs, and they got life signs. And then then they said, oh, well, it's weird chemistry in the soil, so we don't need to test it. They haven't tested since. So they got the answer. They already know the answer. There's life in the soil. There's a bacteria spores in the soil on Mars. And if you give them a little water, a little nutrients, some chicken soup, they blossom. And NASA knows that. That's why they have never repeated those experiments. they're afraid that if they tell people there's life on Mars, people will panic, run down the street, tearing their clothes off, stuff like that.
That's because absurd.
I know it is, but also it's knowledge is power.
Let me go ahead. I'm sorry, John.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Kate.
But, you know, you were met with, I want you to talk to me about the reaction when you and your friend had a discussion about Mars and the fact that you believe that a nuclear explosion happened on the planet.
I'm a scientist, so I was studying very carefully all of the data, scientific data from Mars. We were looking at the pictures of the face of Cydonia and the pyramid of Cydonia. It's a pyramid right next to the face, by the way. Five-sided pyramid. And so we were looking
This is a real face. I had to jump in. A real face. See, because when I was little, they told us about the face. And then they said, okay, when the satellite gets there, whatever they sent out, the probe sent, they're going to get better pictures, right? And then they downplayed that and said it was shadows and all that stuff. It really wasn't a face.
They have played the whole American public for fools. But the American public is an unindicted co-conspirator and all this. They don't want to know. They're frightened by the idea of life in outer space, especially intelligent life. So, but anyway, I was looking at the scientific data in terms of nuclear isotopes from Mars, especially a gas called xenon that's in the air. It doesn't react with anything, so it stays in the air. And one of the people I worked with who worked on nuclear weapons, I didn't work on nuclear weapons, but he did. He looked at the graphs and he said, somebody nuked him. And then he looked at me and suddenly he got this, he'd been smiling before that. And suddenly his smile was gone. He said, somebody nuked him.
Well, what was he looking at as far as the graphs are concerned?
I said, and I asked him more and he says, I can't talk about it anymore.
But what was he looking at that made him come up with that conclusion?
Well, it turns out xenon has various nuclear isotopes based on their atomic mass. And one of them is 129 and the other one is 132. And on Earth, 129 and 132 are balanced. They're 1-to-1. And same as on Jupiter and the solar wind, meteorites, rocks from the moon, everywhere else, it's 129 and 132 are the same abundance. But on Mars, there's two and a half times more xenon-129 as there is 132. And I have found from the literature that this is a sign of nuclear reactions in a hydrogen bomb.
And, you said hydrogen bomb. What's the difference between hydrogen bomb and a nuclear bomb?
What's called an atomic bomb or nuclear bomb just uses uranium or plutonium, and they tend to be small, like the ones they dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Fortunately, they can kill a lot of people with those, but a hydrogen bomb is 1,000 times more power because it uses the hydrogen reaction that makes the sun. Atomic bomb, nuclear bomb, runs on the same principles as a nuclear reactor, only it's just fast. But a hydrogen bomb runs on the same physics as the sun, and you can actually get a thermonuclear explosion when a whole star will explode. It's called supernova. And the physics of that supernova and the physics of a hydrogen bomb that we've set off on Earth are just about the same. It's called our process.
Have we used that on anyone?
No, we've never dropped a hydrogen bomb on anyone, at least not on purpose.
But they've tested them on the planet.
They tested one in the Pacific, and it was supposed to be 6 megatons of hydrogen bomb of TNT. Instead, it was 15, so it was much bigger than they thought it would be. They had miscalculated it a little bit, and so they it contaminated all the islands nearby where people were living and a bunch of Japanese fishermen. So and some of them died. And so it was they have killed people with hydrogen bombs, just not intentionally.
So, John, was this detonated? Was this an atmospheric detonation?
Yes. that particular test was an atmospheric detonation. They later moved everything underground, so the ground would absorb the shock and they wouldn't produce a lot of fallout. But the first tests were in open air, and then they could measure the results from the test, and that's where they found the Xenon 129.
And I'm just because I'm curious, how far up in the atmosphere? I mean, and isn't that dangerous? I mean, don't you speculate that that's what happened in on the planet of Mars?
The evidence from Mars indicates that they that hydrogen bombs of massive size were detonated there, at least two of them, and they were detonated in midair. So this, I mean, you say, well, maybe there was a supernova on Mars. No, there was no supernova on Mars. If there were supernova on Mars, there wouldn't be a Mars anymore or even a solar system. So this has to have been the only thing we know that makes this kind of isotopes other than a supernova is a hydrogen bomb, and they detonated them above the ground. Like at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they'd set off the atomic bombs above the ground to make more shock waves to kill people more effectively, actually. And the same thing apparently happened on Mars, and it left two radioactive hotspots on Mars, and also the places where it went off are covered with glass, which is what they found on Earth when they set off hydrogen bombs above the ground and made the ground into glass. So they found that on Mars. So this can't be a natural event. We're talking hydrogen bombs as big as the Empire State Building dropped from space.
And where on Mars, do you know?
On the north of Mars, where there used to be an ocean. And they dropped one, the really big one they dropped near where the face on Mars is. And then there was another slightly smaller one that they dropped on the other side of the planet. And that's near another city of ruins called Galaxis Chaos. And so the bombs coincide with sites of what looks like archaeology on Mars. So it's very sad. It looks, in fact, like the civilization on Mars was targeted, but they were primitive people. They look like it was Old Kingdom Egypt or the Mayans, kind of that kind of architecture.
Let me ask you something. Explain to us what would happen if that was, you know, I mean, if we were there, what would we witness? Would that kill everybody instantly, or would some people be able to survive that for a while?
Some life would survive, but most of it, the atmosphere would have been blown out into space. So, I mean, we imagine a planet like Earth with the oxygen atmosphere and everything like that, and then an ocean. And then the ocean, most of the atmosphere gets blown off into space, so the ocean freezes and boils, and all the people die because there's not enough oxygen left to breathe. And of course, the fallout kills whoever stays underground and tries to come out. It would have been very terrible.
Could you survive underground if you had the resources?
Well, if you had some idea that this was coming, perhaps you could survive underground for a long time. People came up with ideas for surviving underground. If there was a nuclear war here caused by ourselves, and it can be done, but I remember when I was back then in the Cold War, I decided I didn't want to survive a nuclear war. I was just going to go out in the parking lot with a cup of coffee, watch the whole thing go if there was a nuclear war.
Okay, let me ask. Go ahead, John.
You think like that when you work at a nuclear lab, finally.
Okay, let me ask you that. Let's talk about the architecture and the face, essentially. Can you give us some kind of idea about how big that face is and things like that?
These things are enormous. That's why they were able to see them from space so easy. The face on Mars, the face at Cydonia, is roughly about a mile from the top of its helmet to its chin, and then about, you know, half a mile across. And then the pyramid nearby is about 2 miles across. These don't look like they were built brick by brick. It looks like people took existing mountains or hills and put some brick on them to make them look like they do. And then, of course, there was some erosion. All archaeology gets eroded. But it looks like the Sphinx and the pyramids at Cydonia, and then at Galaxis Chaos, which is another site. They have two faces. One of them looks a lot like the face at Cydonia. And they look like the Olmec heads made by the Olmecs in Old Mexico.
Really? Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
What about irrigation canals and stuff? You keep mentioning it had, you know, an ocean and, you know, they had water, but has anybody seen
it? Yeah, it doesn't, you know, a lot of that stuff would have been filled, small stuff would have been filled in by blowing dust and everything, so you probably wouldn't see it now. But the whole setup doesn't look like an advanced civilization at all. It looks primitive, which is even more tragic because apparently they were subject to a nuclear attack, and yet they were very primitive people. They don't look like they were an advanced culture at all. They look like Old Kingdom Egypt or Old Mexico.
What about like other large, there's some other very, very large structures that were seen and found on Mars as well, right?
Oh, well, yes, there have been other things, but we've tended to concentrate on the face at Cydonia and the pyramid nearby it.
How big is the pyramid? You didn't say anything about dimension.
Oh, it's the pyramid is about, I'd say half a mile high and about 2 miles across. It's got five sides to it. It's not four-sided like on Earth. It's got five sides, like a pentagon. Can imagine how excited the people at the Pentagon were when they saw the pictures of this. So you got to have a sense of humor. Yeah, and by the way, this is not a good discovery. This is a very sad discovery. I was really, really sad when I found out that this is what happened. And in fact, I wept like a child for about 5 minutes, and then I had to get a grip. I think, well, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I had to get a grip on myself. The good news is that we know it now, K-Town. We know this happened. The idea now is to make sure it don't happen to us.
Do you feel that the mission to Mars is really, really important now?
Oh, absolutely. I'm recommending that the federal government have an emergency Mars program to send astronauts to Mars. And they should send astronauts. Don't send the people from JPL. JPL has been trying to cover this all up.
Are they the ones that are running the rover missions and things like that? Or
yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so they're not going to show us anything.
Oh, they're not that they find nothing.
Yeah, right.
Mars is their all-you-can-eat buffet for research money. And, you know, Jet Propulsion Labs in Pasadena, California, and the Manned Space Flight Center is in Houston. You know, they did the Apollo. And those two places, Houston and Pasadena, have been bitter enemies ever since Apollo. And so they figure if there's something, if they discover even, I heard one of the people from Jet Propulsion Lab even said, don't you realize that if you find life on Mars, it's death for JPL? Because that'll mean Houston will take over Mars. And Mars has been a big money maker for them. It's money. It's money, girl.
Right. I understand that.
I hate to say it, but scientists are just as interested in money as people on Wall Street.
Oh, you better believe it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in, well, you tell me before I ask you this question, have you heard that they found something that I'm sure there's a ton of stuff that they found that we will never know about. But have you found something have you heard about something in your circles that they've found that is really significant on.
Well,
I mean, in recent years.
I have been told by people who work with the Pentagon that there are a lot of pictures from Mars they've never released from space. And some of the rover pictures show very strange looking things. One of them looks like an Aztec idol, but they don't slow the rover down. They take these pictures. They got two pictures of this thing and they just kept rolling. They didn't stop to investigate or look at it more closely. They don't want to find out because it would end their money. It's really come down to that. It's an argument about politics and money. Who owns the planet Mars? Is it going to be Houston or Pasadena?
It's not like, you know, the United States has dibs on every planet. I mean, what are the other countries doing? Are they going to Mars?
They're investigating Mars, too. You know, the Chinese have a rover up there. I guess it may have broken down, but then there's the Europeans. They have spacecraft orbiting Mars. They've tried to put down rovers, but theirs crashed.
Are they sharing information with the United States, John, or is that just like whatever they find out, they just keep to themselves, or how does that work?
Well, except for the People's Republic of China, everybody else is part of NATO. So NASA's operating under kind of a standing order that if you find what looks like a dead civilization on someplace, you don't report it. They're afraid it'll cause panic. And, you know, it's how many times have we had information that we decided just not to share with everybody else? Because we don't know how to explain it, and we're not sure how they'll react, you know?
It's infuriating,
situations.
Though.
What's that?
It's infuriating.
It is infuriating.
You know, they don't get to decide what we get to hear.
And, you know, I wrote a science fiction novel about the I wrote a book about all this called Death on Mars. So you guys can read it on Amazon.com and you can hear the whole story of what I found, and I've got it all documented, so you can look up the frame numbers of the pictures from Mars. At the same time, though, I wrote some science fiction about the collapse of the UFO cover-up, what that's all about. Well, it's a science fiction novel, right? And in there's a character. She's helping to investigate the UFO cover-up, and she discovers that she's a UFO abductee. And then she gets hypnotically regressed and finds out what really happened to her. And she then says in an interview, she says, "Well, I've met these people from outer space." She says, "The good news is they're a lot like us. And the bad news is they're a lot like us." Now, you know, the human race is not a bunch of angels. Just imagine a whole universe full of people like us, K-Town. It makes you want to go hide under your bed sometime. But, oh, no, you got to go out, stand under the stars, wave at them. They'll wave back. You know, you just got to be tough. You got to be tough.
Okay, so your buddy, we kind of got off onto something else. I didn't let you finish talking about your conversation with this other gentleman.
Oh, well, they have a big program in this country, mostly secret, where they monitor the air and they can tell if somebody set off a nuclear bomb by the nuclear isotopes. It gives a characteristic fingerprint of nuclear isotopes. And xenon 129 ratio to xenon 132, the amount in the atmosphere, if that's greater than one, that's a sure sign there was a nuclear weapon set off someplace. And it even rose on this planet because we were making, we're doing a lot of nuclear testing.
And he immediately, I noticed you said he immediately just shut you down. He couldn't talk about it anymore. Why do you think he said that?
We were actually standing in line to use a Xerox machine. In those days, that's what you did. You couldn't download stuff from the net. So you just found stuff in a book or a magazine and Xeroxed it. So he's standing in line with me at a library at Sandia National Labs in Albuquerque. And it's an unclassified area. It's just a library. Not supposed to talk about anything secret. And so he's standing there in line with me, and he saw me that I was reading this book about Mars, so he asked about it, and I said, well, there's this weird thing, and I showed him the graph showing the xenon isotopes, and that's when he suddenly, he'd been really very friendly and happy before that, and then suddenly the smile ran away from his face, and he just looks at me and he says, somebody nuked him. And then he looked around. It was like suddenly he looked around and he realized he was in the library. He wasn't in a place where he could talk about classified stuff. So he just said, excuse me. And then he set his book that he was going to Xerox down and just left. He went back into the doorway into the lab where you could have classified stuff. And I didn't follow him. I figured he didn't want to talk about it anymore. So that's what happened. And I showed this to other nuclear weapons experts later in my career. And they agreed with him. They said, yes, that's what that means. But they can't talk about it because they're under security oaths.
Did you tell NASA?
No. Well, I informed NASA eventually, but the people I told were the people at the Pentagon. The Pentagon has its own CIA. It's called the DIA, just another letter down the alphabet, and it's Defense Intelligence Agency. So I told them what I had found, and they sent over somebody to take, I showed him everything I'd found, and he took careful notes, and he was very serious, and he says, I said, what do I do now that I found this? I found it in the open literature. It's not secret literature. This is just scientific journals and stuff. I put this together. And he says, we'll get back to you. And then 6 weeks later, I waited. I thought they might never get back to me and I'd have to just be quiet about it. But no, 6 weeks later, they got back to me and they said, we don't see any reason why you shouldn't be able to publish this. So they want this to come out, at least the people at the Pentagon. NASA, however, they make the sign of the cross when they hear about this stuff. There's people who've been showing pictures from Mars from the NASA files, and they work at NASA, and they cover their faces and won't look at the pictures. It's happened twice.
That's crazy. Why do you think the...
It is crazy.
So why would you... Why is there a disagreement and there's not a common goal to disclose it like the Pentagon wants?
The government has factions in it. And the attitude at NASA is they've kind of been told, you're supposed to look for extraterrestrial life, but not find it, look here, look there, there's an old joke about somebody who loses his wallet in this one little town in the Midwest. And they find him at night looking under the one, there's only one street light in the entire town. And he's looking underneath it for his wallet. And they said, well, why are you looking there? Did you think he lost it there? He says, no, but it's the only place I can see.
You're funny.
So it's a little crazy. And NASA, if you start talking about life on Mars or dead civilizations on Mars seriously, they'll say, well, you're not going to get any grants from us anymore. And that's essential to people at universities to get grants. Universities run on money, too. And so they enforce discipline on all of the space scientists by just saying, don't talk about this if you want to get any grants from us. So they've just kept it quiet
You talked about the it's the xenon that was found on the planet. But it also made what you call glass, but it's not the.
Yes.
Explain what that glass is and how much of it was there.
They set off the first atomic bomb on Earth. They set it off on a tall tower, and it turned the surrounding. And it was in the desert in New Mexico, and they. It was called the Trinity test, Trinity. And so they set it off, and they're in the middle of World War II. They were trying to get this bomb ready and drop it on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They wanted to end the war. And so before any more people got killed. And so they set this thing off. And then afterwards, when everything had cooled off, they discovered that the top surface of the sand at the desert place had been turned to green glass, Coke bottle green glass, and they called the glass Trinitite after the test Trinity. Now, that glass you can actually see from space because of its color. You can look at it in infrared and it stands out in infrared. So they did surveys on Mars and they found out, yes, there's this glass around these two radioactive sites on Mars. And the glass is also etched with what appears to be nitric acid, some kind of acid. And that's what happens in a nuclear weapon goes off. It makes a lot of nitric acid out of the air. So, and this is just enormous deposits of this glass. And if you look at where the center of the glass and the radioactivity is, there's nothing there. It's just smooth. There's no craters, there's no volcanoes, there's nothing. It's just smooth as a top of a billiard table. So that means it went off. And if you look at pictures of Nagasaki and Hiroshima afterwards, they were the same way. There was no crater. It was just smooth. It was all burned smooth and covered with glass.
That's really interesting. That is truly interesting. And how much of it... how does it cover the whole area? You said it was detonated around the north side of the planet, but
it just covers an area probably about 200 miles across, 200-300.
That's a lot.
it was enormous. It was enormous. It was almost unimaginable, that kind of level of violence. The only thing you'd see like it would be when a whole star explodes. Supernova.
And if one was detonated here in our atmosphere, the same type of glass would be created. I mean,
Yes.
Wow.
And there wouldn't be anything left of the human civilization unless somebody dug far underground. Everybody would be killed. And the people wouldn't be able to come out of their shelters for years. And then they'd have to come out in spacesuits because there wouldn't be any air. We'd have turned Earth into another Mars.
That is really scary, too. That's really scary.
Well, two reasons I'm publicizing this now is, one thing, I don't want us to do this to ourselves, but at the same time, we have to face up to the universe the way it is. I'm sorry. And the rest of the universe is like New York City.
You said that they started to, I guess, set these off underground. I mean, how is that better? Wouldn't that be just as bad?
Oh, well, they had to make them smaller. And so they, one of them they tested and they didn't know what they were doing, basically. They drilled down into a water table. So it was full of, so there was this enormous steam explosion. So the whole thing blew up and made a big crater. That was embarrassing. And but I've been out to the test site. You could see what happens. They set them off underground and turns the whole chamber into glass where they set it off, and then it shrinks, and so it makes this little kind of dippy crater on the surface, and you can see just rows and rows and rows of these little dippy craters. I mean, they're only a couple hundred feet across.
Where are they doing it?
Well, this is out in Nevada, where they used to set off atomic bombs. nuclear and small hydrogen bombs.
Is that near Area 51 or is it an area outside of the...
It's an area outside of Site 51, but Site 51 is just down the road about 200 miles.
And so do we have those? I mean, how many of those do we have? I mean, are they making them or what? What are they doing?
K-Town, we got no shortage of nuclear weapons. No shortage at all. Both the United States and the Soviet Union, when the Soviet Union was still around, and now the Russians have, and the Russians, U.S. and the Russians, and then also the Chinese, and now even India, we have lots and lots of nuclear weapons, enough to turn this place into another Mars. And so, but at the same time, let's say, do you live in New York City?
No, I live in Tennessee.
Oh, you live in Tennessee. Okay. Well, the nature of the universe is it's beautiful, it's fascinating, but it's also a dangerous place. And one of the things that makes it dangerous is people like us living elsewhere. I'm sorry. I just have to break that to everybody. Don't nobody panic. Don't nobody run down the street tearing your clothes off. You know,
I totally get what you're saying. I'm
joking about the world smoking hair.
Yeah. We have to know the truth. You know, it's really frustrating that they keep that from us as if we can't handle it. Come on now.
Oh, ridiculous. We handled the fact that in a half hour, the entire earth could be turned into a big graveyard.
Yeah, with COVID, right.
Well, but I grew up with nuclear war just a half hour away. And we all managed. We didn't manage very well, but we did. We can deal with this.
And we need to know about
it. It's tough. Our ancestors used to deal with all sorts of stuff. Leopards creeping into the camp at night, giant cave bears, stuff like that. The human race is a bunch of adrenaline junkies anyway,
And we're resilient. We can handle it. Let me ask you this.
We're very tough. Yeah. We're a very tough bunch.
Is there something more powerful than a hydrogen bomb that they're working on?
Oh, they keep trying to, they tried to make a matter antimatter bomb. But the problem is that it's like, the military never uses nitroglycerin for stuff because it goes off if you look at it hard, it's too dangerous to use. So that's matter and antimatter. That's that people say that would make a great bomb, but then, it problem is it go off when you wouldn't intend it to. So they got hydrogen bombs. They work really well and they don't go off till they're supposed to.
I really find it interesting that you have in your book all kinds of rock formations and things like that. Can you tell us about some of those that are anomalous?
Mars is a big planet like Earth, and it's got all sorts of interesting rock formations. And then it's got this giant canyon. It's, it would go from, if it was on Earth, it would stretch from LA to New York City. And it's deeper than the Grand Canyon on Earth. So we got a lot of interesting, and then you got super volcanoes. You got this one volcano that's like 200 miles across and 5 miles high. But at the same time, you've got then a really smooth area in the north where there used to be an ocean. And I, believe it or not, I discovered the ocean while I was investigating Mars as part of the what's called the Independent Mars Investigation Team. It was a group of scientists and engineers organized by Richard Hoagland, really brilliant guy. And he organized us and got us all looking at all these pictures and figuring out the Mars science and stuff. And that's how we did it. But the near where the face on Cydonia is, suddenly the ground gets really smooth. And it was an old ocean on Mars. So you have mountains, and then you have kind of shoreline, and then you have this smooth plain that used to be an ocean.
Let me ask you about Phobos.
Phobos is a very Phobos is very it, to me Phobos looks like a completely natural part of the Mars system. Some people have said maybe it's a space station. Well, we got close-up pictures. It just looks like an asteroid or something. But it's Phobos and Deimos, fear and terror, are the two moons of Mars. And Phobos is really a nice, it's a ready-made space station. If you want to land on Phobos, you don't land on it. You just pull your spaceship up to it and dock with it. And then you can dig into the soil. You know, it's like 20 miles long, 10 miles across. You can dig in there and protect yourself against radiation and make it into a space base orbiting Mars. It's damn convenient.
Is that the only one? So you said it was two of them.
Yeah, we got two. Then there's a smaller moon called Deimos that orbits outside, but it's smaller and it's farther away from Mars. But Phobos is the one that's really they think will be really convenient. So you could set up a base camp on Phobos with astronauts and supplies and a hospital, all this good stuff. And you wouldn't even have to go down to the Mars surface. And then you send people from Phobos in a small capsule down to the surface. And I've recommended this is the best way to explore Mars. Like when we go to Cydonia Mensa, just send down three people from Phobos. Have a big base on Phobos, especially with a hospital, so that they can get up back up there in a few hours. And if they break their leg or something like that, if they fall off the big pyramid or the nose of the face, they can get medical help soon. And K-Town, one way to look on this is, yes, this is sad news, but at the same time, it is like a science fiction adventure movie, and we're living it.
Exactly. I have one more question that just popped in my mind. Now that you talked about Phobos, what were they before this happened to Mars, before the planet was hit with a nuclear, the hydrogen bombs? What was Phobos? Was it even there? And Deimos, you said Deimos.
Yeah, it looks, it orbits right around the equator of Mars. So it doesn't look like a space station at all. It looks like an asteroid. It looks like a small moon, what you would expect to look like. It looks like an asteroid.
Yeah, but was it there before the nuclear explosions?
Yeah. It looks like it's always been there. It looks like it formed when Mars formed.
And it looks the same even after the nuclear explosion, is what I'm saying. Or do you think it looked different?
We don't know what it looked like, but it's got a few craters in it. You know, it's been hit by a few meteors. And I imagine when it all happened, it got hit by some debris. But I think pretty much it's been pretty much the way it has been. And like I said, the civilization, the archaeology we found on Mars doesn't look like it was an advanced civilization at all. So doesn't look like they could have built a space station.
This has been really interesting. I love discussing this with you. I'd like for you to take a moment to tell my listeners, John, where they can keep up with any other research that you may be working on, or maybe where they can follow you on social media if you have that.
Right now, the best thing to do is, there's a lot of other people working on this, Society for Planetary SETI Research, SPSR. You can go on and they have a lot of references. I wrote this book called Death on Mars, and you can read that. That's 95% up to date. I've got better data now than I had when I wrote the book back in 2015. And then you can look up Brandenburg Mars, and there's a lot of stuff on the net. NASA, YouTube has a great thing, NASA's Unexplained Files, where did aliens nuke Mars? Yeah, they have a nice thing on that. So you guys can bring yourself up to speed on what we're dealing with here. But just imagine we're in a science fiction adventure movie. It's a little bit sad, but at the same time, nope, this is the truth, and we can deal with it. We can deal with it.
Well, you know what? The information you're putting out is very important, and we do appreciate it very, very much.
I don't want there to be a nuclear war on Earth caused by ourselves. That would be bad.
Right.
And I certainly don't want 10 years from now for a Klingon battle fleet to assume orbit around the Earth and say, congratulations, you're part of the Klingon Empire now. Please pay your taxes on time. Because that's what we're talking about. If you want to know what the real universe looks like, watch the old Star Trek episodes. Here's Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura. I'll tell you, Nurse Chapel, you tell them we found a dead civilization on Mars. Captain Kirk will say, Lieutenant Uhura, take a special message to Starfleet. Tell them we've discovered we're not alone in the universe. He's not even going to break a sweat over this. He's used to it. He's used to living in a world, a universe where he knows the human race is just one of a dozen other species. We're exceptional in our own way, but we're just one of a whole living universe. We're part of a living universe, and we belong in it. Good, bad, and ugly.
You got that right. This is awesome. I do appreciate your time. And the book is called Death on Mars, The Discovery of a Planetary Nuclear Massacre. John Brandenburg, my special guest. John, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time. To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.